This is a Radio 1 91 FM podcast.
Tēnā koutou, this is the R1 News Show. You're here on Radio 1 today, Irirangi Kotahi. Ko Seb Tene, and I am joined with my fellow news reporter, Nico, and we will be taking you through the news here on this mildly sunny Tuesday morning.
Coming up on the program Itinera, we have for our first feature Seb speaking to PhD student Grace Clare on her research into the impact food rescue groups have across New Zealand on the growing food waste crisis and the need to raise awareness on this issue.
After that, we have our second feature, the Felonious Fandango, an illegal gig hosted in an abandoned music venue which highlighted the need for gig spaces and venues in Dunedin. For our vibrant music scene, I'm going to be speaking to venue owners, the Fandango organisers, on their thoughts about our cultural crisis.
Following that, we have our third feature of the show where I speak to Holly Luxton, a local legend, student and mental health advocate on her new workshop. On her new workshop, she has launched Freezing Fridays. I'm going to be interviewing about her workshop and what motivated her to create a space that is inclusive and a fun way to practice mindfulness.
And ending the show, we will have this week's installment of Creature of the Week with zoologist in training Andy Johnston. This week, the creature is the little blue penguin. Really excited for this one. But before all that, here's Kero Kero Bonito with the song Flamingo. See you soon.
How many shrimps do you have to eat before you make your skin turn pink? Eat too much and you'll get sick. Shrimps are pretty rich. あいつらはピンク動物園で思ったピンク食べ物でそうなんだ実は私はタラコが大好きプラスエビカニ食べようピンク色になるのだからみんな違う色人間って勘違いしてるよね Black, white, green or blue Show off your natural hue Flamingo, oh 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 If you're multicolored, that's cool too You don't need to change It's boring being the same Flamingo, oh 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 You're pretty either way
鶴の尻尾下に向かって曲げたらフラミンゴ意味不明だけど面白いでしょ日色に染まった世界今日も地球のどこかでエビをむしゃむしゃ食べてフラミンゴはピンク色に染まっていくぜ 1, 2, 3
Green or blue, show off your natural hue Flamingo, oh 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 If you're multicolored, that's cool too You don't need to change It's boring being the same Flamingo, oh 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 You're pretty either way Have to eat before you make your skin turn pink. Eat too much and you'll get sick. Shrimps are pretty rich. Green or blue, show off your natural hue. Flamingo, oh 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 oh. If you're multicolored, that's cool too. You don't need to change. It's boring being the same. Flamingo, oh 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 oh.
Radio 191 FM.
Tēnā koutou, ko Aileen tēnei.
Ukrainian troops are being evacuated from their last remaining stronghold in the besieged city of Mariupol. Host to the largest battle in the Russian invasion of Ukraine, Mariupol largely fell to Russia last month, but Ukrainian forces held a large steelworks in the city. Today, the General Staff of Ukraine's Armed Forces said that the personnel remaining in the steel plant had fulfilled their mission and for them to be evacuated through humanitarian corridors. The war in Ukraine has been ongoing since late February. $100 million will be invested into mental health and addiction services at Thursday's budget. Speaking in Christchurch this morning, Health Minister Andrew Little announced a raft of mental health funding, including $27 million for community-based crisis services, $18.7 million to enhance specialist child and adolescent mental health and addiction services, and $10 million for specialist mental health workforce development. The government has also confirmed $90 million in funding for in-school mental health services for primary and intermediate age students. And that was the news on the bulletin on the R1 News. Now, the weather.
The Radio 1 91 FM weather.
I tēnei rā, Otipoti can expect partial cloud, light winds and showers in the afternoon, with a high of 16 and a low of 8. Āpōpō, look forward to a high of 17 and a low of 10, with partial cloud clearing to sunshine in the afternoon.
Ngā mihi, Eileen. That was your weather and news bulletin for the 17th of May. Now coming up, we have our first feature on New Zealand's food waste crisis. But before that, we have Asarangu with their latest single, LLPLZA. We'll be right back.
You're listening to R1 News here on Radio 1. That was Astarangu with LLPLZA, or Lollapalooza. We'll leave that up to everyone listening to decide. And we're about to move into our first feature of this show, with Seb talking to PhD student Grace Clare on her research into the impact of food rescue groups across Aotearoa, the growing food insecurity crisis, and the need to spread awareness around these issues. Let's take a listen now.
According to the Ministry for the Environment, an estimated one-third of all the food produced globally is lost or wasted between farm and fork each year, which is the equivalent of 1.3 billion tonnes of food that is never eaten. Kiwi Harvest is a food rescue organisation which began in Dunedin and is a member of the Aotearoa Food Rescue Alliance. Along with other organisations in the alliance, they work with food businesses across the country to redistribute quality food that is unable to be sold for a variety of reasons, such as oversupply or simply nearing its use-by date. To date, Kiwi Harvest has rescued over 6,000 tonnes of food. Grace Clare is a PhD student at the University of Otago. Her area of research is looking into the social, economic and environmental impact that food rescue organisations have across Aotearoa. Grace believes that there is a concerning lack of awareness around the issue of food waste and food insecurity.
Honestly, before I came to university, I didn't really know at all about the extent of the problem. Yeah, even just, I don't know, the whole awareness and knowledge of food waste is kind of an issue as well, you know, no one actually really understands. And if they do understand, then they might not have tools to then be able to actually do something about it. In New Zealand, we know that at the household level, in a year, we waste $1.7 billion worth of edible food, which is massive considering we have such a massive food insecurity issue in New Zealand.
Grace's research is the social evaluation of the impacts of food rescue. By measuring the environmental, economic and social impacts of these non-profit organisations, her research assesses their value, which could serve to help attract more investment or even just help the organisations themselves understand their own value in order to create more impact.
And so we went out and we talked to 40 different stakeholders across 3 different organisations, and the feedback that we got from these people was kind of if food rescue didn't exist, they would essentially starve, or, you know, we would just have a massive food waste problem on our hands. And even Countdown, they have literally a policy that every Countdown has to partner with a food rescue organisation to, diminish the amount of food waste that's going to landfill. Yeah, which kind of just highlights the importance of them and, kind of this integral role that they play without us even really knowing.
Although food rescue groups have a positive impact on our food insecurity and food waste crisis, they are far from a be-all and end-all solution, and according to Grace, there must be wider recognition of the problem at hand to effectively solve these issues.
Food rescue organisations are kind of these temporary fixes, they're only this band-aid solution for this massive, deeply ingrained systematic issue of food waste and food poverty, which just stems from way more complex issues. So in an ideal world, food rescue wouldn't exist. Because we wouldn't have any food waste or any people living in food insecurity, but unfortunately that's not the reality. And so for now, I think food rescue organisations are playing a really awesome role in New Zealand. But yeah, it's a tricky one.
Alongside sufficient awareness and investment into the issue, Grace believes that there is a lot that can be done on an individual level.
Individually, you can make a really big impact, and there's lots of little tips and tricks that you can do to reduce your food waste consumption. There's this food waste hierarchy, so it's this upside down triangle, and essentially at the top is reduction and prevention. So anything you can do to actually reduce your food waste in terms of, writing a list when you go to the supermarket, or using up everything in your fridge before you go buy something else, or, eating your leftovers, just all these little things that you can do to reduce your food waste. And then it kind of starts to trickle down. So we have feeding people and feeding animals, and that's kind of where food rescue comes into it. And then it keeps going down, and then this composting is very low down in the hierarchy. It's obviously the very, very bottom of the triangle is the landfill, which is what we want to avoid, but composting is only just above landfill, so we've got all these interventions that we're trying to achieve before we get into that point of composting. Not saying that composting isn't great. The whole circular economy, idea of a circular economy, keeping everything regenerative rather than linear, as it is at the moment for a lot of things.
Last month, Environment Minister David Parker announced a three-pronged plan known as the Transforming Recycling Plan, which aims to solve the waste crisis in Aotearoa and help establish a more circular economy. Along with a national recycling system and a program to encourage bottle recycling, one of the plan's proposed changes was a curbside food scrap collection for all homes and businesses by 2030. According to Parker, food scraps make up a third of a typical household's rubbish each week and create greenhouse gas emissions once the food waste begins to break down in landfill. Adding that providing access to household curbside food scraps collections is a simple step to reduce emissions and return nutrients to the soil. The proposal to change Aotearoa's waste systems is currently in its consultation stage, and submissions to the plan will close next week, Sunday 22nd of May at 11:59 p.m.
That was Seb speaking to Grace Clare on her research into food rescue groups and their response to the food waste crisis. Coming up, we have Thelonious Fandango, Your Inalienable Right to Dance, where Seb got to interview music venue owners and performers on the lack of music venues in and around Otipote. But first, here is Lawrence Arabia with A Lake. Stay tuned.
A lake, a still and ageless lake, a dark and depthless lake. You made a splash, it was concentric, as you'd expect it. A field, a yellow painted field, depicted in a dusty book. The mind was weak, the body willing, that fact was chilling.
Time is 24 minutes past 11 and you are listening to the Radio 1 Tuesday News Show. That song was Lawrence Arabia. Sorry, that song was A Lake by Lawrence Arabia. Coming up on the program, we have the Felonious Fandango feature, which was an illegal gig hosted in an abandoned music venue seeking to highlight the need for gig spaces and venues in and around Dunedin. I speak to music venue owners and Fandango organisers on their thoughts about our cultural crisis. Without further ado, here it is.
On Sunday, April 10th, a group of Dunedin bands broke into and hosted a gig at Sammy's, a former nightclub purchased by the DCC in 2017 that remains empty. The illegal gig was dubbed the Felonious Fandango. Radio 1 spoke to the organisers of the event, and this is what they had to say.
We really wanted to dance. We were really sad that we couldn't dance, and it was clear that we weren't going to do any harm. It's possibly one of the best stages in the country. It rivals the region, and it's got such a storied history, you know, like, so many really important bands have played there, and
determined to continue the legacy, the musicians formulated a plan to play the one-off gig, one that they believed was safe, secure, and created a space for people to have fun. The bands donated their time as they felt it was an important thing worth doing.
I guess doing important things because they're worth doing. I'm not sure about everyone, but in my mind you can't be paid for the amount of work you do as an artist. Regardless of how much you're paid, art is such a lot of passion. It requires such a lot of passion and such a lot of work that you'll never be paid equal to your input. And sometimes it's nice to just get together and enjoy yourselves as much as possible and forget about any sort of economic input. So I guess that's part of it. But yeah, we just wanted to dance. That's really it.
Although it was an illegal gig, the organisers of the event say that safety was a priority for them.
No, we were really sure to keep all the fire exits clear. We signposted any hazards that we found in the building. There was you could get up into the heavens above the stage by this terrifying 10-metre ladder of wood. So we signposted everything. We were just looking out for everyone as well, both the organisers, shall we say, were just keeping an eye on people. There was only one guy who got a bit too drunk, sat was outside and just made sure it was all good, but we had water and, we were just very nervous, because obviously there's no legal powers. We'd have to make sure, personally, that everyone was behaving themselves and was happy and healthy,
The organisers considered the event a success, with over 100 people in attendance. While they don't believe that Sammy's itself should be reopened given its age and location, they said that they believe that there should be more medium-sized venues around the city when it comes to viable and long-term options, and that the Felonious Fandango was about creating a much-needed space for the creatives of the city. It wasn't merely a protest gig.
For me, the idea of protest is asking someone else to solve your issues. And I think the Felonious Fandango is about solving a lack of music venues straight up, just ourselves. I think that's why it was so joyous and so fun, is because we weren't like, hey, DCC, we need more venues. We were like, here's a venue. Who wants to play?
The DCC has been working on a live music action plan, and an update will be presented to Council in July. The Council's 10-year plan includes $17 million for a mid-sized theatre in Dunedin. While a final option has not been decided, a DCC spokesperson said Sammy's was ruled out due to the costs involved and other constraints. Responding to questions about the Felonious Fandango, the spokesperson also said that the DCC was aware of the recent unauthorised event held inside the building. The building was entered unlawfully and the matter has been referred to police, they said. Sam Chin, the original owner of Sammy's, spoke to Radio 1 when he found out about the illegal gig and said he was curious as to why he wasn't invited.
The only disappointment was I wasn't there.
The building originally opened as the Majesty Theatre in 1897 and remained a prominent theatre for decades before Chin began Sammy's in 1983. Sammy's was shut down in 2017 after Chin lost his liquor license due to a number of safety and legal issues on the premises. And fearing it would be torn down, the DCC bought the building. Sam and his brother now run The Crown, one of the last remaining music venues in the city, which many bands consider the final frontier of gig culture. Sam agreed that Dunedin is missing venues and that there is a dire need for more support for our creative community.
They can hold 800 people.
Yeah.
That's what they're missing. The band that's coming, well, that seats. Yeah, well, they're not coming here.
Yeah.
Because there's no venue.
Yeah.
So that's pretty disappointing. Yeah. They played at Sammy's a couple of times.
Sam said that while there is a way out of this crisis, the solutions are tricky.
Well, you need money. Yeah, for a start. Money. Yeah. That's the other thing. I mean, there's not a lot of people. I mean, the name's all old money. You know, it's still the established. They got plenty of money. But the old people aren't out there spending it. Well, they wouldn't buy a venue and say, let's do something for the young ones. I think it's a bit sad, really, because for the name to grow, you've got to inject money into it. Doesn't matter, those old buggers.
Yeah.
They're not going to risk running a bloody nightclub, yeah. You know, a band venue.
Yeah.
You know, for what? We don't need to do that. We just put it in the bank and get 3% or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, so, yeah. But whoever takes the risk, well, you know, I'm all for that.
Yeah.
You know, whoever does it, I'll be pleased.
Yeah.
I'll be right behind them.
Yeah.
You know, because me and Jones, we're getting too old to be doing that.
Yeah.
Well, Jones isn't. He's fit as.
Sam also added that the situation of the past looked a lot different to how it does now.
20 years ago, there'd be 15 pubs with bands in it.
Yeah.
Now, you get a handful.
Yeah.
If that.
Yeah.
If that.
Yeah.
So, yeah, so the bands are struggling.
Yeah.
Venues are struggling. Pubs are struggling. We're all struggling.
Yeah.
When Radio 1 reached out to him, Dunedin Mayor Aaron Hawkins agreed and said that in the 20 years he has lived in Dunedin, there have certainly been cycles in terms of music venues, how they've structured and the communities they've served. But the traditional model where bands could play for free and the venue would recoup their costs across the bar has become far more difficult to sustain. If we only have venues for hire, then that obviously makes it far too difficult for both local and touring bands of a certain scale. Hawkins also said that this COVID protection framework saw artists as the first to be hit and the last to recover, thanks to the restrictions on gatherings and now a degree of public reluctance. We continue to advocate to government and other funding bodies alongside other councils around the country for targeted support for the entertainment and events industries, given the rough couple of years that they've had. Max, the frontman for Hot Sauce Club, one of the bands at the Felonious Fandango, said this of the current gigging situation.
It's pretty terrible at the moment. There's not really anywhere to play except U-Bar or Dive, at least on a student perspective. You know, just not practical.
Max also notes that the current lack of venues and creative spaces also impacts audiences and how exposed people are to music, saying that a lot of gigs are specifically catered to a particular year group and demographic.
And the hard thing about U-Bar is that it's catered to, like, pretty much a strictly student audience. If, you know, like, I doubt that anyone over the age of probably fourth year would go there, and certainly not anyone that's outside of uni age, you know, like,
yeah.
So it's hard if you've got, like, a mixed crowd that you want to get along to gigs or whatever.
The lack of venue spaces has caused musicians to try and find new ways to gig and share their music with the Dunedin community. One of the most popular ways to do this was to start playing gigs at flat parties, where there was no strict licensing, expenses or regulations. Gigging at parties seemed to be briefly become a viable alternative, but it still doesn't generate quite the same magic, according to Ollie, member of another Felonious Fandango band, The Beatniks.
House parties definitely have their place. It's like epic to, you know, just have like a little disorganized throw together, just rager at someone's flat. But yeah, that doesn't really compare to having a, yeah, like you said, dialed in sound system and like
lighting.
Yeah, lighting and just the whole shebang. Yeah.
Save Dunedin Live Music was set up by local musical talent to try and solve many of these issues and is now working with the DCC on a live music action plan, and the DCC has already committed funding. A DCC spokesperson told Radio 1 that venues are a focus of this work. Additionally, Mayor Hawkins said that there are active discussions with private developers who are looking at a new purpose-built live venue to sit on the stadium precinct. Hawkins said that this would add to the options for mid-size acts, local and touring, but is still a couple of years away from bearing fruit. The musicians' messages to the council are the same.
Funding.
Give us somewhere. like the DCC just pushes this image of still running, riding the Dunedin sound wave, pushing this image of like a creative hub and stuff of New Zealand arts creative hub, but then kind of contradicting themselves by not funding any venues or having like nowhere, no substantial place to play.
I think a lot of people feel the same way. It's not just, you know, musicians or students. It's, you know, like a lot of the general public feel the same way, that are there just as kind of supporters of music or of the Dunedin scene in general. Like a lot of them are disappointed to see what it's come to. Mm.
That was Seb speaking to music venue owners and musicians about the music culture crisis. Coming up, I will be speaking to local legend Holly Luxton on her new project, Freezing Fridays, a breathwork workshop to practice mindfulness. But before that, here's Mild Orange with What's Your Fire? Kia ora, you're tuned into Radio 1 News here on Radio 91 FM. Radio 1 91 FM. There we go. Just playing was Mild Orange with What's Your Fire. Now we're about to move into our third feature for this show. I interviewed Holly Luxton, a student and mental health advocate. Holly is a local legend as well who wants to further the talk of mental health and welcome people to practice mindfulness, which can help navigate mental health. It is important to practice mindfulness and strategies and help establish networks to aid and help mental health. In light of this, Holly has recently started up a very cool project, Freezing Fridays, a space to practice breathwork in and alongside cold water immersion. Breathwork encompasses many breathing techniques and practices where you commonly challenge and change your breathing pattern in order to positively influence your mental, emotional, and physical state. I had the absolute pleasure of talking to Holly on her new project. Here is the interview. I am now joined with the absolutely lovely Holly Luxton, a self-proclaimed hippie and an advocate for all things mental health. Welcome, Holly. Thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you, Nico. Good to be here.
And we are going to be discussing mental health practice and mindfulness in relation to your new project, which has been going on for, I think, around a month, Freezing Fridays. Now, Freezing Fridays, as a onlooker, seems you go submerge yourself in some freezing cold water in and around beautiful St. Clair, and you practice breath work. But can you tell me and everyone listening a bit more about your project, Freezing Fridays?
Sure thing. To the outside point of view, I guess it kind of looks a little bit absurd at 7 a.m. going into the freezing cold water. But there is a method to the madness. In the breathwork side of things, it is a conscious connected breath. So that's breathing in through the mouth and out through the mouth with no pause between the inhalation and the exhalation. And so what that does to your body is it over-oxygenates it, and it's creating a similar It's creating like a stress response, but it's a positive stress response, similar to when we enter the cold water. Our body, like you know, we release certain chemicals and stuff, and because our body is reacting to the cold, or it's reacting to the fast pace of the breath and the deepness of the breath. But it is a positive stress, and it ends up being good for you in the long term in terms of mental clarity, awareness, mindfulness, and things like that. And the science behind it, I guess I'm still learning about that, but you get a rush of adrenaline through your system. So when you enter both the cold water and when you start doing the breath work as well.
It is super interesting how our bodies can release these chemicals such as adrenaline, which do give us a rush and then impact positively on our state of mind. That's so sick. And they have such a positive impact on us. And it is a tool, definitely. But I also want to ask you, what inspired you to take up the practice of breath work itself, and how it led you to where you are now with your practice?
I guess I drew inspiration from Wim Hof, firstly, who is known as Iceman. Yeah, and also from the idea of discomfort. We become very comfortable with the comfortable. And so it's about kind of pushing yourself out of your comfort zone and doing that through an avenue in which actually brings about so much goodness as well. Like the benefits from cold water immersion are huge, as well as breath work too. Like, it's just, I kind of like to think of it as these practices are like helping to build the foundation within you that makes you a stronger pillar when things in the external world are happening and it's shaking you a little bit. You are aware of what's happening, and so you can have these tools to then react in certain ways which help you through that time.
That does seem like such a great practice to get into and to take that step. But what got you into wanting to share this practice, this unique and powerful practice of coupling breath work with cold water immersion and making it available to both the student and wider Dunedin community?
Well, what got me into this was I've always wanted to help people from a young age. And I think that my own suffering also provoked like an aspect of change in me, an element of change and wanting to, you know, have these foundations, which made me better capable to deal with things going on in my life. And it's just been huge for like my mental health and things like that, which I think is really important. So that's kind of what got me into it. And I have had like a few very important people in my life who have brought me onto this path of kind of going into the stuff that you don't want to look at and recognizing that it can be transmuted and it can be turned into something positive. The Freezing Fridays was also inspired in the sense of kind of creating like a little bit like a community sense. Like I think it's really community is super important, and if we can start to slowly like bring that in, then it's going to be huge for people who are finding things a little bit hard or who aren't finding things hard and who just want to be connected, because as humans we want to be connected.
That does sound like a really great idea and a great initiative and reasons why you created Freezing Fridays. And I guess this relates to as well, why to you is it so important to advocate for mental health and make it accessible to everyone and also allow people a space to actively practice mindfulness, which can help with mental health?
I think that everyone goes through a period of time when they feel really quite low. Your mental health is something that you want to be flourishing and not to necessarily be super worried about. And so it's hard when you've got your mental health going on and then you've got all of this other stuff happening in your life, and it can just feel overwhelming and too much. I'm advocating for bringing more mindfulness into the area of mental health, hence the Freezing Fridays. But yeah, I think being able to talk about it is also very important. Offering a skill, offering a tool that someone can take away with them and use. And I like to think of it as like we have a toolbox with us. In a moment of distress or something, we can pull out one of those tools, whether it be mindfulness, whether it be slowing our breath down. And we can use that to help with how we react to the situation. So breathwork is a beautiful practice, and it's just a tool. Like it's a tool that isn't for me to give to you, and it's not for another person to give to another person. We all have it, but it's about accessing it. That's key, and about having people around you that can hold space for you so you can understand the power of it.
That is a very good reason indeed to advocate for mental health, so it can allow people to learn these very important skills to help navigate and guide them, as you were saying, and also the importance of discussing mental health and actively practicing mindfulness as a community. And Holly, where can we find information about Freezing Fridays and how to get involved? Any questions that people listening may have?
Good question. I normally just post it on my Instagram story like a couple of days or a day before the Friday, because we're doing it every second Friday at the moment.
So it's not going to be this coming Friday, but next Friday you're having another one.
Yes. Yep. So that is the 27th of May, I believe.
So 27th of May, we can expect to find you at 7 a.m. outside Board Riders Club in St. Clair.
Yep. Yep. I will most likely be wearing a wolf jumper, so you'll spot me.
Wonderful. Thank you so much, Holly, for telling everyone listening more about breathwork and your project Freezing Fridays, how they can get involved and why you should.
That was Nico speaking to Holly Luxton, a student and a mindfulness guru, talking about the practice that she wants to share called Freezing Fridays, which is a mix of cold water immersion and breath work at St. Clair on Friday mornings. Sounds fun, but sounds difficult.
Very difficult, but as she was saying, it is about challenging yourself too, and then you get the reward. Like that
big old dopamine.
Yeah, the big
drop.
Old dopamine release, which I think is sick. And also Holly did say outside the interview as well that normally everyone goes and has a nice chat and some coffee afterwards as well. So a very great thing to get involved in.
Very
so, yeah.
Cool.
Next Friday.
If that sounds like your cup of tea, next Friday, May 27th, outside of Board Riders Club.
7 a.m.
7 a.m. Goddamn early. So this brings us to almost the end of our R1 News show here on Radio 1. But before we say goodbye, it's time for another installment of the much-anticipated Creature of the Week with our friend and budding zoologist Andy Johnston. Right before we dig into that, this is Kane Strang with Warping in the Sun. At the end of the song, we'll see you for Creature of the Week. You got to tune to the Tuesday news show here on Te Reo Irirangi Kotahi Radio 1. Time is 7 minutes to 12. And that song you just heard then was Warping in the Sun by Dunedin local Kane Strang. Now it is time for the very special part of our show, Creature of the Week, where we talk to budding zoologist Andy Johnston on a fascinating creature that has been in the news lately or has just piqued our interest. G'day, Andy. How are you, mate?
I'm very good. How are you?
I'm good, man. A little sick, but...
Oh, no.
It's that time of year, mate.
It is. Yeah, yeah, it's getting colder.
But flu season. Mm. Get your jabs, everyone. Okay, enough of that. Let's talk about animals.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, yeah. So, like,
what's today, man?
Well, today we're going to have a deep dive into the little blue penguin.
Yee-hoo.
or the corora. Because I was looking online, I found this really cool video on a news article about a little penguin that had come onto shore and was distracting a sea lion. And then in the background, a whole crew of little penguins, like, using it as a diversion to get onto the beach.
Yeah. Man.
It's
what?
Awesome.
What teamwork?
Yeah.
What valiant little heroes.
Do you reckon, though, that one of them, like, did one of them, like, choose to do it? Or do you reckon they just pointed someone and go, like, okay, mate, you're doing it. You have to go distract.
I like to think it was, like, an election process that they sort of voted with fish and, like, shiny rocks and stuff.
It was the outcast who had to go to the seal.
I think it was just an unlucky penguin that got picked on. But the other, it survived. It survived.
It survived.
All of the other friends' penguins survived. So,
and this video occurred on the Otago Peninsula, didn't it?
You did, yes. Yeah. Just out on Pilots Beach.
Pilots Beach.
Yeah.
Out tidal ahead, right?
Yes.
Right,
yeah,
by the Albatross,
like right down the end of the peninsula.
How gorgeous. So, penguin, world's smallest penguin, isn't
world's
it?
World's smallest penguin.
Tiny.
Yeah. We have the honor of having the world's smallest penguin here. A few weeks ago, we talked about the world's largest parrot. So, we got a few world's smallest and largest in the country.
We got the extremes covered. Eh?
Yeah.
How tall is it actually as the world's smallest penguin?
It's tiny. So, it's
tiny.
They can be about like 25 centimeters tall.
Damn.
So, if you think about your ruler from like, you know, primary school, smaller than that.
Oh my goodness.
Right?
Just, wow.
And about like 1 kg. So they're wee little things.
Just the size of like a fish.
Yeah. They're tiny.
Oh my gosh.
Definitely earned the name Little Blue Penguin. They're also called fairy penguins as well. So, yes. Yeah, so like small little fairies, which is really sweet.
They got 2021 Bird of the Year.
Yes, right, yes.
Big achievement.
Yeah.
For a little
as they
thing.
Should. Yeah.
As they should.
Mm-hmm.
What else can you tell us about these little cute little munchkins?
Well, they're, something interesting is the scientific name is Eud. I'm gonna butcher this. Eudiptila, right? Which means in itself, good little diver, as it's meant. So it can dive like somewhere between like 260 feet down.
Oh,
so they're incredible swimmers, like going out there in the ocean, catching all their prey and whatnot. Amazing divers swimming around, and obviously quite agile to escape that sea lion on the beach.
If they're that small, they must be eating very small fish.
Right? Yeah.
What's their diet consist of?
No, I'm not actually 100% sure, but I think it's just, like little crustaceans, little even smaller fish and those kind of things, yeah.
Ah.
But the thing is, they you'll see them if you stay up at night, because they're mainly nocturnal. They'll come onto the beach at nighttime, where they'll go and they'll roost in like vegetation and caves and rocks.
Yeah.
And if it's somewhere where humans are, they'll go under your house or into your like woodshed or something, and they'll rest there.
So there is a bit of human penguin encounters with these little guys.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So they're all over sort of New Zealand, mainly on offshore islands and areas on mainland where there's pest control, just as usually is with these things. But they are found, you know, around Dunedin and like Oamaru and like all those kind of places where they interact with humans often. Yeah.
And is that something we can do to help these little penguins? We can try create little nests for them. So they don't, you know, get too lost trying to
absolutely
their houses.
Yeah, so unfortunately, penguins, little blue penguins, are classified as at risk and declining. So something we can do, something that Doc recommends, or if it's available to you, is that if you have little blue penguins in the area, maybe inquire into a penguin box or a penguin shelter that they might be able to live in. Or if you see one, you know, very injured or stranded, there is a hotline on the Doc website you can call as well to help them out. So.
Cool.
Just the little things in the area. You can also, you know, if you have a dog, make sure it's, you know, not off the leash around little blue penguins at nighttime. You know, it's just stuff like that.
And your experience with blue penguins, have you ever encountered them up close?
I have, yeah. I have. The one time I did find one was on accident, and it was such a magical experience, I thought. So I was at a beach, I won't name it, just because a lot of people don't end up going there and potentially disturbing it.
For them, yes.
But I was going through a bunch of caves, and I saw these little like webbed feet prints on the ground in the cave, and I thought, oh, what's this? So I journeyed in, and the cave was getting smaller and smaller, and then right at the back of the cave, I saw this little blue penguin just chilling at the back. Obviously, you know, trying to keep the noise down, keeping the light low, not to disturb them. This was during the day, and it was such an awesome experience.
Gorgeous little encounter.
Little blue penguin, yeah. But you can see them quite often at nighttime, like at the end of the peninsula. Like, yeah. There's reports of them just crossing the road or being on the beach. And so, yeah, you can quite easily see them.
I think quite an important PSA to maybe get out there is that there has been in Otago's history a lot of parties in some of the caves on the peninsula in Dunedin.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And we're trying to raise awareness to basically not stop these rave caves.
Sure, yeah.
There's lots of other outdoor spaces to party, but by playing loud noise and big flashing lights, it's pretty damaging to the habitat of the little kororo, isn't it?
Yeah, it is, exactly. And I think that's a very important thing to think about. I think if you're going to be doing that kind of thing, just consider a location that isn't going to be affecting an at-risk or an endangered animal, and instead maybe go and at night and quietly observe them instead. If you're going to do that, if you want to be in that environment, and then go have your huge party somewhere else, I guess. Would be some nice advice for the little blue penguin.
Wise words, Andy. Yeah. Wise words. And so, what else? What else can you tell us about little kororo?
Well, I think. Yeah. So something amazing that is in the kororo and often in a lot of other animals is this concept called counter shading. So little blue penguins are this brilliant blue, right? It's really stunning blue, and on their belly is a white. So you often see this in animals where, when they're swimming in the ocean, if you're an animal from underneath, you see a white belly against a very bright sky background. Or if you're swimming on top of a penguin, you see a dark, like, blue back on the depths of the ocean. So it's this way to sort of keep camouflage in the ocean. And you see it on lots of birds, you see it on lots of fish, you get this idea. Anytime you see something that flies or swims that has a lighter belly and a darker top, it's called countershading. Yeah, so it keeps them protected, keeps them camouflaged, yeah. Which is really cool, I think.
God, nature is intelligent.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
Wow.
Amazing, amazing designs.
And so is there a place, I believe, you can watch these little blue guys doing their thing online?
Yeah. So they have a live stream that you can watch. So similar to the albatross we talked about a few weeks ago.
Yeah.
There's a live stream of penguin box, little shelter that you can watch.
Yay.
You can see them come in and
constant entertainment.
Yeah, exactly. And they'll be monogamous within a breeding season. So they'll stay with their pair for that breeding season. And then they might have a new pair the next breeding season. So you'll be able to see some little penguins, you know.
Little pairs.
Staying together.
Little couples.
And yeah, which is really sweet.
So cute. Yeah. It's like they deserve their own reality TV show with the albatross. with the lesbian albatross we were talking about the other week.
Exactly.
Little monogamous breeding pairs.
Yeah.
Kororo penguins.
Yeah, for per season. It's really sweet.
How exciting.
Mm-hmm.
We've talked a lot about birds on Creature of the Week, haven't we?
We have. Well, I think that's just the reaction to New Zealand's Aotearoa's landscape.
You know, that's our bioscape.
Amazing bird species that, because we're such an island, you know, a lot of birds flew over here and have evolved and adapted in a very peculiar and interesting ways, so we're very fortunate to have them. Yeah,
amazing. Well, keep the birds coming, man.
Yeah,
I love it.
Absolutely.
I love learning about this stuff, and I'm sure everyone listening loves it too.
Amazing.
On behalf of the news team at Radio 1, thank you again, Andy, for coming in.
Of course, thank you for having
your
me.
Knowledge on us.
Yeah,
dropping some wisdom.
Yeah.
I can't wait till next week, man.
Yeah, same. We'll see you next week.
Awesome. That was Andrew Johnston, budding zoologist, talking to us about the kororo, or the little blue penguin, and these amazing little creatures that inhabit our very own Otago coastline.
Now, I believe it is time to wrap the show up. And first, we're going to do a rundown, though, of everything that happened in this jam-packed show before we finally close on out. Okay, I'm going to try to do this. So, first up, we had Seb speaking to PhD student Grace Clare on her research into the impact food rescue groups have across New Zealand on the growing food waste crisis and the need to raise awareness on this issue. After that, we had our second feature, Thelonious Fandango, and a illegal gig hosted in an abandoned music venue, where Seb spoke to music venue organizers and musicians alike to highlight the need for gig spaces and venues in Dunedin for our vibrant music scene. After that, I spoke to local legend and mental health guru, Holly Luxton, on her new workshop and project she's launched, Freezing Fridays. And then we were just joined by the lovely Andy for Creature of the Week, where we talked about little blue penguins. And I believe that that was everything.
That was everything.
I hope it was.
That was a very comprehensive roundup.
Thank you. I'm quite proud of that. And now we're going to close out the show with a brand new hot off the press song from a recently released EP by the incredible, cannot speak highly enough of them, band Man Ray. This is the first time that these boys have released any music. And it's going to be playing on air for the first time right now. This is The Crew.
See you, everyone.
See you, everyone.
Thanks for listening to a Radio 1 91 FM podcast. There are heaps more at r1.co.nz.